Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. It is Wednesday, June 28, 2016, and I am pleased to announce I am joined by my co-host who's been missing in action from the show the last 2 weeks, the infamous Stan Friedman.
Hey, Paul. Good to be back, man. This has really been a crazy beginning to the fall silly season, as we like to call our travel season in this time of year in franchising. But this year has just seemed like almost not even back-to-back, but things overlaying one another. And I don't think I've spent about three nights in my own bed since the end of August.
Wow, I know you were up in Buffalo at the big Wing Fest. You've been
the National
Buffalo. Yeah, you've been in D.C. You've been in Philly at the Springboard Conference this week. Of course, you're in Atlanta, where you're your hometown, but you'll be staying at a hotel during the Leadership and Development Conference next week. We're in Denver. Yeah, it's a busy schedule for you, that's for sure.
I'd love to thank Gary Gardner and Therese Tilgen for this week reprise. You know, that at least there's no airplane ride this week. It is a conference, and it's a big event, and we're proud to sponsor it. But thankfully, it's across the street from my office, Paul. Who could ask for more?
I don't think you'd ask for more unless you were trying to get out of town.
So, yeah, it's been an exciting time, though. And, you know, Springboard last week, wow, what an event. I mean, if you can do anything more than tip your hat to Brad Fishman and to Lane Fisher and to Entrepreneur Magazine for the work that they've done to evolve and morph that conference into a major and important event for emerging franchisors, bigger than I've ever seen it, and just an incredible turnout. What a great location. Facility was great. The weather was incredible. It almost felt like Atlanta instead of Philly. But it was a great event, and it just continues to grow. And more franchisors that one might not even consider to be emerging are participating and becoming part of that event. So, you know, emerging became a moving target. There were people in the room that had up to or close to 100 units that were still defining themselves as emerging brands. So it's an interesting perception versus reality, I guess, moment to define what emerging is. But I'll guarantee one thing. Nobody left that conference without some take-home value and some incredible nuggets that they're going to be implementing into their businesses as soon as they get back to home base. That conference
Heard that event was just phenomenal. I was scheduled to go, and last minute, because of some things that had been taking place, I had to cancel and the first one I've missed, and I really regretted missing it. But as we know, we get busy doing things, and of course, other things pop onto the screen that needed my attention.
Well, and one of those things that popped on your screen, Paul, is something that anyone who's gotten an email from you in the last little bit might have noticed: a bit of an adjustment to the signature line. Want to talk about that?
Yep. I've been working with Franchise Brokers Association on and off for the last 4 or 5 years, really with a goal and objective of really taking the brokerage profession and franchising to a different level, kind of parallel it to, you know, real estate, insurance, financial services, brokers, and really make it a profession that, you know, people can really, really be proud of. And, of course, a lot of that, you know, has to do with technology and education, a lot of great things that have been going on at the FBA. I was introduced to their board recently. I became a member of their board and almost simultaneously was offered the position of president of the FBA, along with forming a strategic partnership between the FBA and my company, Franchise Foundry. So this all came about literally 5 or 6 days before Springboard. So as you can imagine, last week was a whirlwind for me, my first week at the helm. And of course, now we're also preparing Foundry going to Franchise Expo West with some of our emerging clients. So it's been a busy time, and certainly thank you for mentioning that I did have something going on.
Well, it's just, you know, I saw you at, I can't remember how many years ago it was. And in fact, I think you were there with a raging fever one year. Where you spoke at that conference, just running on vapors. So your relationship with that association isn't anything new, but the title certainly is. And best of everything in bringing some leadership and some directional insight and strategy to that organization's future growth and to the network itself. Kudos to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, a couple of other quick things front of the house. Not a lot today, but two things that kind of made me smile a little bit, Paul, because they're both something other than what I usually associate with the world of franchising that we live in. But, you know, we always say that franchising is not a black and white industry or business model. I shouldn't say industry, but it's not a business model that just lives in black and white. It's all about not even grays, but shades of gray in that we're in the relationship business. And two things kind of jumped off the page in the Franchise Smart Brief this week. One was an article about practicing cognitive empathy and how it can make for a better workplace. And it's all about somebody who I'm anxious to have a conversation with and learn more, a lady named Elizabeth Borges. And what the Smart Brief piece talked about was how to encourage cognitive empathy as one of the best ways to create a work environment in which people who have different experiences can all be successful, according to Elizabeth Borges, head of the women's leadership at Everwise. Rather than being guided solely by our unconscious instincts, we can be intentional about how we treat one another, particularly in the workplace. Well, in today's polarized world, franchising or otherwise, I want to know more about that, Paul, and maybe Elizabeth becomes a future guest for us, but I'm certainly going to reach out to her to learn more.
I think that would be great.
The other thing that caught my eye was right in that same issue of Smart Brief, and it talked about how to make a better plan with mind maps. Mind maps employ nonlinear thinking to clearly define themes, subcategories, and ideas in an organized fashion, according to Mark Ellis, rather than ending up with a notepad full of these ideas line after line. A mind map can help you organize them into something meaningful and ultimately engaging. This comes from Mark Ellis at leadchangegroup.com, someone else that I plan to reach out to and learn more. A little bit of metaphysics here in franchising this week, Paul. We're reaching to the right side of the brain. Love it.
I think you're getting a little deep on me, and I like it. I think it's great. We need to have some deeper thought on things, especially if there are ways to help everyone in franchising. And I look forward to you bringing two of those guests onto the show. I think they would be a nice change to the show.
There you go. So before you introduce today's guest, Paul, just take a deep breath, close your eyes, put your thumb and your forefinger together, your index finger, and give me an All right, take it away.
That was good. I was thinking about that because I had a lengthy conversation with a dear mutual friend of ours last night, Sherry Christopher, and we were doing exactly that. So I was really chuckling. You know, today's show is about maximizing profitability with power, processes, and systems. Say that three times real fast. The moment is now. We are at the point where you won't miss us quickly sailing past our competitors. It comes down to how we've shaped the business, a dynamic mix of state-of-the-art technology systems and advanced recycling programs that are helping drive the brand's expansion into new markets throughout North America. And, of course, that was a quote by today's guest, the CEO of Junking Franchise System, Michael Andriacchi. And I think I got that right. Did I, Michael? Welcome to Franchise Today.
Hey, thank you guys for the time. Yes, you did get that right. Andriacchi.
I need a bell here, Stan, every time I do something like that, because we really had some difficult pronunciations. But anyway, Michael, I'm really pleased to have you on today's show. Seems like all the information we've been receiving from All Points Public Relations, a very, very dear friend of the show, along with some other public relations firms that help us bring on guests just like yourself that often are below our radar, and looking through and seeing what the growth has been, and we'll give you an opportunity to talk about that. We're really pleased to have you on today's show. You know, that was an interesting quote, and there's not a lot of quotes out there from you. You seem to be a little bit on the quiet side, so it makes me wonder, you know, how you got into franchising and to the point where you're at today.
Well, you know, if you know me really well, I'm not quiet at all. I'm actually very outgoing and have a lot of energy. You know, one of my mentors many years ago, we sold our seventh franchise or awarded our seventh franchise. And I went on Facebook and said, hey, seventh franchise. And one of my mentors kind of pinged me and said, hey, it's great to have success. It's great to do those things, but try to stay humble in that process. So, you know, I took that to heart. And although I have many quotes and I'm very outgoing and have a lot to say in our internal network, I don't try to make myself out there too much in the public eye. That said, I'd love to have the Junk King name out there as much as possible, obviously. You know, I started and I worked for a competitor in the space initially back in 2004, was still in college. I was a criminal justice major, really wanted to get into either police work or continue into detective work, and really enjoyed the books and understanding of the law, et cetera. And was a big athlete, and it just felt like that's where I wanted to go with the direction of my life. And in college, needed a side job, ended up getting a job for one of our competitors. And here we are 11 years later. I thought the industry was amazing. I thought it was untapped. Thought I could change some of the things that they had done to continue to scale across the country. So started Junk King in 2005. Started franchising the business in 2010, and here we are today, just shy of 80 franchises. So we've shown some great success, been really excited about it. It was just kind of serendipity of how that all happened, and wasn't necessarily my career path at the age of 25, but here we are.
So it says you started with a partner or with a friend as a co-founder. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship between you and how that melded into a franchise organization?
Absolutely. We played soccer together when we were 9 years old and had a just great friendship, amazing friendship. Our personalities were the same. That was one of the challenges that we had early on in the business, is that we had the same skill set. Sometimes when you go into business and if you have a partner, you would like them to have maybe a little bit different skill set than you so that you guys can divide and conquer. But we were able to work through that. And we were actually roommates at the time when I was working for this now competitor. And I was coming home saying, wow, this is a great opportunity. One thing led to the next. Both aggressive individuals are competitive, sales-oriented, network-oriented. And so launching the business just seemed like something that we wanted to do. And from the beginning, had the aspirations of wanting to franchise the business, and that's because the competitor or the company I was working for had already done that. So if they can do it, why can't we? Was kind of the thought process. So it was never to go in and say, okay, let's have one truck or five trucks locally. It was how fast can we franchise the business? What kind of foundation do we need to create internally to be able to do that? And, you know, you set goals and you reach them. And that's where we are.
So you started with your kind of your theory of we can do this, and even though we're like-minded and we don't necessarily have different skill sets, we know each other well enough and we respect each other well enough and have each other's back enough to make a go of this. What were those early years between 05 and when franchising began like, and at what point in the early years did you realize that this could be scalable enough to actually become a franchise business?
Well, the early years were exciting. We both worked on our first truck together, the two of us, every day. It was a lot of fun because we were able to talk about the business consistently as we were working together 8-10 hours a day on the trucks, loading jobs. Really quickly, we ended up with a second truck, which separated us a bit. He ran one, I ran the other. We were just really good at building relationships with those in the community, with our customers, whether it's a realtor, a property manager, contractor. We did that really well. I remember early on, and we kind of laugh about it, that we hired somebody to help us with administrative work, you know, QuickBook data entry, things like that. And I remember giving them a stack of invoices for about 6 months. Can you put these in that system called QuickBooks? And we really just didn't understand the financial piece of the business, which is funny as you go into business. Obviously now I know that stuff inside and out, but then we were just saying, okay, we're gaining customers, we're acquiring customers, the bank account's going up, that must be a good thing, and people are talking about us all over town. So those were the positives of the business, operationally, sales, this and that. Marketing, we struggled a little bit. We didn't have a Google AdWords campaign until about 2 years into our business. Our website was not good at all, and we tried different firms to improve our website and try to get traffic through. At that point was the online efforts were still kind of in their infant stage from a franchise job customer acquisition perspective. Today, it's without a doubt the leader in how we get our jobs is online. Anyway, but we struggled there. We struggled from a financial piece. So those were or accounting. Those were some of the things that we needed to implement. And I remember early on with some of our mentors is if you don't know how to do something, you hire people to do it for you. And we were able to really just set the ego aside, get people involved in our business, and empower them to do what they do. I think that if you work in our office, you know that I put you in charge of a task, a responsibility, a department. And we may meet once a week or once every 2 weeks, but I let you do what you're good at. And I don't micromanage you, and I empower you to scale the business, whether that's marketing, finance, whatever your responsibilities are at the company. I think that's why we've been very successful is we have a great team surrounding us here, and we've allowed them to be creative, try new things, and improve their individual skill sets or bring their skill set to our company.
So just a quick follow-up as we talk about the early years of the company prior to franchising, and as you started to establish these tools and systems and ways of doing business and going to the marketplace, getting your marketing in line, at what point do you feel like you were gaining traction, and what do you think the consumer's view of that looks like? Given that you've got other national or international competition in your space, and I'm pretty certain that it's a safe bet on the West Coast, as would be in Atlanta where I am, that while there are national brands in your space, it's still a very fragmented business, right? There are a lot of people out there that aren't doing what you do as professionally and systems-driven as you guys do. So open the eyes of Paul and our audience and tell us what it is from the consumer's perspective that gains traction quickly with guys like you, and how, in addition to your AdWords and professional social and marketing, consumers find out about you and the difference that exists.
Right. So, you know, the business, again, is interesting. When I first came in, you could ask 10 people about, you know, our industry in general, and maybe two of them knew that you can have a junk removal company come out and clean up items at your house. So I started to see that change a little bit when people would say, I see your trucks everywhere. And we only had two trucks, but they thought we had 10 or 15. So we knew the big red truck stood out well. And we went with a bigger truck than our competitors so that there was more value there for the consumer. And I think what it really comes down to for a consumer and calling us, and we obviously have some strategic online marketing, print marketing, media marketing, those different things. But when you go into somebody's home and they call you for a service, whether it's plumbing or electrical or whatever your issue is, there's two things that you need to overcome with those customers. And the first and most important thing is trust. So you have to be able to overcome that trust aspect. And really, trust is customer service. Do you answer the phone on time? Do you show up on time? Do you have cleanly uniformed guys? All those little things come into play when you talk about, you know, how do and why do customers call us? And when did we decide that this could be a national thing? Is that as we were doing that, and what we would say is kind of bring back old school customer service. And as we did that and saw people really engaged in that and saying, wow, this isn't like some of the other companies we use, we said we thought that we could really do this on a national level. The other thing that you're trying to overcome with customers is pricing. So it's trust in pricing. Is there fair value in what you're offering? And I think that in, compared to some of our competitors, we were offering more value, more volume at a cheaper rate, and that became attractive to the customer. That said, you still had to get people aware of our industry as a whole. And to do that, we did a lot of community involvement. And that was the beauty of it. If you're in San Francisco, California, the peninsula where we live, which is, you know, a bigger metro across the country, and people don't know who we are, then you certainly would think the rest of the country has that same problem. They have that same understanding as, what do I do when I want to clean out my house? I have stuff on the side yard, construction, property managers, realtors. Well, we said, if this is an issue here locally, it must be nationally. You know, our competitor was already national and had zero competition nationally, so we thought we should absolutely do this. Now, the other piece to that is, once you have the customer's trust in pricing, there's three things they want to know. Pricing again, what are you doing with these items? Are you recycling them? And time becomes very sensitive for the customer. So if we could tackle those things and do them really well, we felt like we were having unbelievable customer service, bringing it back to where customer service used to be, with a handshake meant everything, and be able to scale it nationally. I don't know if that answers your question. I know I'm kind of back and forth with it here, but I think that's what really pushed us to say we should do this on a national level. We have a great opportunity here. It's changed our lives, and really wanted to help other individuals change their life, start their own company, scale it, be able to have the success that we were having, as well as, hey, let's have the consumers free up more of their time, recycle more with these items. If you're cleaning out your garage, you're going to load everything in the back of a pickup truck and take it to one place. So how much of that stuff is recycled? With us, because we have so much volume, we're able to break that stuff down and bring metal to the metal yard and recycle cardboard or plastic or electronic waste or yard waste. We're able to then help the environment, not watch these landfills continue to grow, and it just becomes exciting at that point for me. Of course, I'm biased to that.
Well, certainly advanced recycling programs are a big part of it. And also technology. Explain a little bit on how you utilize technology more right now from the consumer standpoint. How does the consumer interact with the technology? I'm sure that some of it is seamless, but how does it make for a better consumer experience?
Well, we think we're a leader in this aspect of the business, but we have just barely scratched the surface. The ideas that we have to make this easier for the consumer, I think Uber, for example, has really made things simple and easy for the consumer. You go onto your phone, you have somebody pick you up by the click of a button. There's no money that transfers hands. There's no tips. There's no confusion. You're picked up in a nice car. And so then we start to ask ourselves, from a service industry perspective, can we do that in the future? How do we make this easier for the customer? We've done little things like customers can send us a photo and we can give them a quote via text message. I know that sounds like something very simple, but that's obviously not happening in the industry. Customers can go book jobs online real time, and we will be at their house same day services. We have GPS functionality and integration into our system, so we want to integrate that with the customers. We have a really robust internal software base that we call the NetWare that we created internally for us to manage our franchises, our customers, and all those things. But I think without the customer knowing it, that software system is really benefiting them because it's easier for them to schedule. It helps us to show up on time. It helps us to manage our guys, their customer service. So in some roundabout way, that software system is not necessarily in the consumer's hands, but is allowing us to be a better, stronger, more efficient company. As far as scheduling and things like that, when I first opened in 2005, you had to pick up the phone and call us. It would ring to our cell phone. We would pick up the phone and book jobs. Well, now we can book jobs through chat functionality, through text message, through email, photos sent to us, obviously through our call center, which is open 363 days of the year, 15 hours a day. So we want to make this very simple for the consumer to pick up the phone, email us, text us, and have a job on the schedule picked up and hauled away in 24 hours.
So, you know, we hear a lot in franchising nowadays about the consumer experience. It's gone from customer service to customer experience and positively memorable experiences. And of course, we know there are companies out there that do it to, you know, certain levels because it's fairly new, so to speak. And one of the big things in franchising as well as business in general, to measure that is the Net Promoter Score. And I had read that Junk King maintains the highest Net Promoter Score for any service business in North America. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, we're really proud of this number. We have a Net Promoter Score of 89%. We actually have a 41% response rate, so 4.1 people out of 10 will actually take the time to follow up on our review system or platform to tell us how we did, what did our guys do. And the beauty of this system is that we can track it to the individual driver. So we know every driver has their own NPS score, which then obviously gets our system score. And we're just really, really proud of this number. Initially when it happened, we just didn't have a huge sample size. So when we were at 90%, 89%, 88%, I thought, well, you know, when we end up having 1,000 customers on here, that is certainly going to drop because customers and companies around in the company we use to track this, which is third party, which I think is very important, have said, well, a 65 is a really strong score. So when we were at 89%, you know, sorry for the terrible analogy, but it was kind of like taking my first test in history. I got an A. You think you're going to get an A in the class, but you still have three or four more tests coming along here that you have to continue that, which wasn't my strong suit. Anyhow, I thought this small sample size is early on. It's like getting an A on the first test here. You still got a bunch more to go, and is this going to continue on? Well, here we are 3-4 years later. We've had, you know, 100,000 customers plus go in and review our business, and we're still at an 89% NPS score. Some of our, and that's our average. So we have some franchises that are in the high to mid 90s, which is, it's kind of hard to fathom. I've been to networking events and talked to other companies, and we've talked about NPS score, and they were really proud that they just got this big award because their company was at a 69% NPS. I said, wow, that's really good. We do NPS as well. Well, what's your score? And I tell them, and they just can't believe it. So a lot of our training here at corporate is customer service. Who are you without a customer? Our system is based on return referral customers. What does that mean? That means you have to treat customers fair, pricing, trust, all those things come into play. And I think one of the quotes that I love to kind of throw out there and works in every aspect of the business is win the war, not the battle. You're certainly going to have upset customers, and you want to fight that little battle with the customer, but is it really worth it? And so our mindset is, you know what, let's just, you know, we did this wrong, or let's send them a refund. Let's make this right with this individual customer, even if we feel that we did nothing wrong. The customer is always right, and that's that old school customer service mentality, which we do throughout the country and is why I think we have an 89% net promoter score.
Pretty amazing stuff. Hey, this is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman along with Paul Segretto, and we're speaking today with Michael Andriocchi, co-founder and CEO of Junk King. Franchise Today is brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, with more than 30 years' experience bringing emerging brands to market with the kind of growth that comes with experience, healthy, sustainable growth. The Franchise Foundry provides their clients with both coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach. This fosters more effective solutions for their clients and their franchisees. The team at the Franchise Foundry is rich in practical hands-on experience and expertise in general business management, operational and change management, and is skilled and proficient in digital marketing, franchise recruitment, and development. Let them also assist you with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and with guidance needed to navigate those courses should they be of interest to you. Learn more about Paul Segretto and the Franchise Foundry, along with their expanding list of clients at www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. Does your CRM do everything that you need it to do to manage communications and relationships with your prospective and existing franchisees? Does it track all your emails received and sent by the home office teams to prospective and existing franchisees? And does it track text messaging as well? Well, it does when you use FRM. Are you benefiting from the latest version of your CRM software, or are you still waiting in queue for expensive upgrades to a long outdated system? Maybe it's time to call FRM Solutions. With FRM, your system gets updated each year, and those updates are absolutely free. So you're always operating in the latest, greatest version of the platform. And access to FRM couldn't be made any easier from the cloud or directly from within your Outlook inbox. Struggle no more. Get down to earth with practical solutions that require no long-term contracts, no long waits for expensive upgrades, and oh, did I mention, you can even track text messaging with FRM. FRM provides everything you want and need and more from CRM and document management tools. No excuses, just solutions. Take a demo and see for yourself on the web at frmsolutions.com. Hey, Michael, we've talked a lot about the foundational things. I'm really wanting to tear into the franchise side of your business and understand when it was that you got that aha moment that said, I've got proof of concept now. We've done enough locations, or we've done them in enough places, and that you kind of had the change in understanding that building a business as an operator and scaling one as a franchisor are different disciplines. Can you talk a little bit about that epiphany for you and how that came about?
Yeah, again, like I said earlier, it was very early on. We always had the thought process of, you know, when and how can we franchise the business. And I think once we continued to show success year over year of 20, 25, 30% growth year over year in our individual flagship unit, is when we said we want to take this to others. We want to change other people's lives and allow them to franchise our business. We were really green and learning at that time, and we went through many hoops in hiring, you know, non-franchise attorneys or just different. It was very challenging. It took us about a year to even figure out how to franchise the business overall. And then it's taken us a while to understand who our actual franchisees are. I know we can go into that here in a little bit, but it was just kind of this idea of how do we get more of these red trucks on the road? This is the right time. We're continuing to see growth. And we started to see year over year that our numbers were matching up, our dump percentages, our gas percentages, our labor percentages. You started to see a continued ROI or return in our individual systems. So when you start to see a system and process continue to evolve is when you know that you actually have a company or a foundation that can work for others. I think that if you look at the system overall and your labor percentages are jumping from 15 to 28% year over year, and then the next year they drop down to 19%, and you really don't have a good handle on things, then you're not ready to franchise the business. certainly we had to and knew that we have to get into franchising to really learn. You don't know what you don't know in some respect, but we tried to surround ourselves with strong individuals that had been in the industry before, that know franchising, that could help us to scale the business. So we started that in 2009. It took us about a year. That was right around the transition of when the FDD used to be the UFOC, the offering circular, and we initially wrote an offering circular and then had to write the FDD. So, again, you know, if I could give anyone advice, certainly go to a franchise attorney instead of some local attorney that you're referred to, because you're paying for them to educate themselves on the industry. I know that sounds silly now, and I certainly would never make some of those mistakes that I did early on, but those were some of the challenges we had. Our first franchise initialed into the system was in the East Coast. We run a awesome call center here at corporate, but something that we didn't think of is, well, we certainly thought of it, but it was more challenging than expected, is first franchise opens in Columbus, Ohio. Well, there's a 3-hour time change there. So now our call center representatives aren't coming in at 7 a.m. to answer phones. They're actually having to come in at 4 a.m. So those are some of the challenges that we had early on in the industry that we had to overcome.
Michael, before we get to ideal candidate profile, tell us a little bit about what the day in the life of a Jung King franchisee looks like.
Well, I think the initial perspective of with prospects or candidates is that it's more of an operational business, that you have to be out on the trucks and loading trucks, and you certainly save some money there on labor costs and dump fees and efficiencies, and you'll have great customer service because you're the owner, you're out there talking to those customers versus hiring someone to do that. But if you don't hire someone to do that, then you're valuing yourself as a driver, where you just bought a business and you are a business owner at this point. So we really want our franchisees to spend most of their time getting involved in the community, networking the business, work on the business, not necessarily in the business. So the day in the life can be different based on each individual franchisee, but normally it's meet your team in the morning, get everybody ready to go, who's working with who, what jobs do you have on the schedule, and you get your trucks out on the road. Once they're out on the road, you have the ability to do a little bit of office work, maybe some data entry, but we really want you out there pounding the pavement, meeting realtors, contractors, property managers, getting involved in trade shows and doing those things. And then because of our software system, you're able to come in at the end of the day and analyze your business. You're actually able to do that real time from a mobile device. So you're able to look at, okay, how was labor today? Did I run enough guys? Did I have too many guys? You know, did they recycle enough? Because the system helps us to do that. We had a process and a system initially with the flagship company, but now that we have just shy of 80 franchises, we have a really big sample size to know what your, you know, percentages should be. What are your variable costs? What are your fixed costs? What is your average job? What's your driver revenue per hour? How many big jobs should you be getting per month? And so you're able to analyze those pretty quickly through our systems. Overall, it's you got to get out there and you got to get your name out there and get involved in the community is what we're pushing here at corporate.
So the franchisee basically is the face of the franchise in their local market. You have a call center, a state-of-the-art call center for customers call into. You're using AdWords and some other mechanisms to drive consumer awareness as well as attracting them to the business when there's a need. And I imagine that, you know, pricing varies tremendously. At what point and how is pricing determined for a consumer that just calls up and says, I need a garage emptied out?
Well, there's a little bit of a variable there. So it all depends on the driver that shows up. It depends on the load. So We charge on the volume your items consume in our trucks. Our trucks are 18 cubic yards. They're 12 by 8 by 5. So what happens is a consumer calls us. We show up to their house. They show us all the items that they have. Once they show us those items, we tell them how much room we think it'll take up in the truck. Based on the volume, call it a half a truck, a quarter of a truck, we'll give that customer a price. We like the consideration, take the in consideration if there's recyclables there. Is this job, you know, on the fifth floor or in the basement? But we really just charge on volume. So it can be a little bit different. You and I could look at a pile and probably be off by, you know, the difference between half a truck and 5/8 of a truck. And it's really just, hey, let's make the consumer happy here. If we load it in the truck and it ends up being more or less than we expected, then let's adjust the price. But you end up getting really good at looking at a pile and determining how much room it's going to take up in our trucks. And it's making that customer happy. What expectation did they have initially? How far apart are we on that price? And again, it's win the war, not the battle. Make customers happy, tell their friends and family, keep trucks on the road, and really create what we call the snowball effect, which is, you know, long-term business growth. Build momentum in the marketplace. And so when you're doing those estimates, you keep that in mind. Now, that's difficult to translate to every single employee, but if you're very transparent with your employees and train them on the business, and really help them with the skill set that they may not be loading Junk King trucks the rest of their life, to really understand business. And the more they understand business, systems, operations, the better they will be for your internal team, as well as quoting and working with customers.
So team builders, people who have people skills, clearly are going to be successful, or attributes of successful franchisees in this business. What else do you look for, and how do you mitigate against people who think they understand that this is a business they want to be in versus you knowing that they are? What do you do? What is your process for selection, and how do you do as much as you can? Because it is art and science. You're never going to be bulletproof, but how do you flesh out those that don't really understand the business or what it takes from your perspective, and mitigate against failure in your concept?
Well, yeah, just a quick story on that is I started the business at 25 years old and was loading trucks. And initially, we thought that's who our franchise was, young individuals who are willing to get out there and load trucks and et cetera. And we found out really quickly that that's not who our franchisee was. Our franchisees are people with business experience, management experience, sales backgrounds. And the one thing that I like to look at with a prospective franchisee or candidate, which is sometimes difficult to put your finger on, but it's very simple, is do people want to do business with you? And will your employees want to help you to grow your business? And you can learn that pretty early on in having conversations with people, or when they come out to Discovery Day. It's when they go out and do a presentation, do they leave that presentation and the individuals in the audience listening say, hey, I like that Mike, and I want to give his company a try. I want to see what they're all about. At the same time, do your employees come to work and want to help you to build your business? And to them, it's not just showing up for a job. So you really have to put your finger on that. You also want to look at, is this candidate buying themselves a job, right? You don't want people that are buying themselves a job, because it's not just a job. You don't show up from 8 to 5, clock in and clock out when you own your own business. As any business owner knows, you could work 70, 80 hours a week. Whatever it ends up taking, if that's taking out the garbage, well, no pun intended, but you have to do every aspect of the business, from turning the lights on to turning the lights off. And if people are buying themselves a job, they're not accustomed to those type of things. So we have a pretty intense process to work through our prospective candidates. They talk to 5 or 6 individuals at our corporate office, whether that's finance, marketing, accounting. We do our software and mapping calls. And in all that communication, you really start to understand what an individual is all about. And that helps you to determine whether they'll be a good franchisee or not. And then, of course, the discovery day is really important. when you sign a franchise agreement, in some respect, it is a marriage. We have a long-term relationship. So we're not in the business of just selling franchises to anybody that will sign up. This is a long-term relationship. Our brand is really important to us, and we want it to work. So Discovery Day becomes really important when they come out to the corporate office and we kind of figure out whether we'll do well together over the next 10, 15, 20 years.
And so from front to back, I'm interested in how long your process typically runs. I'm interested, it's a three-part question. I'm interested in how long the process runs, at what point you find comfort in knowing that you've got a good candidate, and do you do any type of profiling or research into the candidate beyond what your feelings are? And is your discovery day close to the front or close to the back? Is it more like a decision day than a discovery day, or the other way around?
Yeah, the discovery day is normally towards the end of the process. The candidate comes in, I would say it would take anywhere between, 3 and 6 weeks to really work through a candidate, and sometimes longer. Obviously, we all have schedules and are busy, but the discovery day is at the end of the process to say, is this going to work out? At that point, we already really kind of know whether this is going to be a good candidate or not. We do some profiling, obviously background checks and those type of things, but we don't have, I know there's those databases where you have people fill out surveys and see what their personalities are and some of those other things. We normally go kind of more from the field test, to be quite honest with you, because they are working with our whole team throughout this process over 3 to 6 weeks. Whether, like I said, all different aspects of the team as we're going over finance, and then you kind of start to understand what kind of questions are they asking, Are they on time all the time? What kind of personality are we getting to know them? Do we know more about their personal life? And all that comes up in conversations. I mean, you simply, just this call alone, we know a little bit more about each other. You certainly know a lot more about me. So if you do 10 calls, something like that, you really get to know a lot about an individual, about their family, about their background, what they've done in the past, and will they be a strong candidate at that point, especially when we've brought on, 80 franchises at this point. It's pretty easy to target. And the discovery day is really just kind of the field test and see if this is going to work out for both of us. I mean, they're coming here and looking at us to see if this is what they want to do in the future as well. So it's not just us, making those decisions. The candidates have to as well, obviously. And I was listening early on in your intro, and you talk about franchise brokers. The brokers are amazing at helping people to really understand what they want to do. And they vetted a lot of these candidates for us at the beginning of the process. I remember prior to brokers, we'd have someone call us and they'd be looking at a junk removal business, which is the service industry, and also looking at a beauty supply store. Well, those companies have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And so you really want to ask them at that point is, what kind of industry do you want to go into? Where do you see yourself as owning a business, and what kind of industry is it? Well, the franchise brokers really help with that process and bring the candidates to like different companies that have things in common. So, I'm a big proponent of the brokers out there. They all do. Sure, there's some better than others, but for the most part, they do a really good job of helping us to work through the candidates as well.
So before we wrap up and find out how interested parties can get in touch with you, explain a little bit about the opportunity itself. Are they single unit, multi-unit, area development, and talk a little bit about investment levels.
Right, so we're really, the franchise industry, we in our FDD, we call a unit 500,000 population. We'd like you to be in something at least 500,000. When I first started franchising, I didn't want to have, 500 franchisees across the country that own 500,000 population. We service right now about 140 million population. So what is that, 280 franchises at 500,000, something like that, but we have roughly 80 franchises. Some of them service territory that they didn't initially purchase at this point, but they're kind of neighboring zip codes, and we allow them to go out and do jobs as long as they're not in competition with a neighboring Junk King franchise. So we wanted individuals to have big populations and lots of scale. The beauty of Junk King is it's easier to scale our business compared to other businesses. If you're in the retail industry, for example, let's say you've maxed out a little bit and you feel like your store is reaching a revenue goal continually after one month after the next, you keep hitting those goals. Well, how do you change that? What you do is you open another store. What does that investment look like? To sign another lease, to hire more employees, to do all those things. With Junk King, the beauty is you just add trucks. You add a truck, you make a down payment on a truck, you have an expense of $1,500 a month to pay that truck off, and that truck can go out and generate $25,000, $30,000 in revenue. So that's kind of the beauty of it at that point. But we really wanted our franchisees to have big, big opportunity, big populations. And so we've been able to do that across the country, and we have a mapping software that we use to figure out territories and those things.
Any item 19 that you can talk about before we wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. We have our earnings claims in the item 19. They're really strong, show system averages, the corporate-owned unit, which this year my corporate-owned unit is in our 11th year business, and we're about going to see somewhere between 20 and 25% growth in our 11th year of business. System-wide, we're just over 50% year-over-year growth. Franchisees that were in our system last year are just over 35% year-over-year growth. So we're seeing every year franchisees able to scale their businesses, and that's because they're able to add trucks to the system and able to service more. The more trucks you have, the faster you're able to get to jobs, the more visibility you have. So we're really proud of our item 19, really, really strong numbers of the corporate-owned unit as well as the individual franchisees. It works you through really understanding our numbers from a fixed and variable cost overall. So we're excited about the margins that we have here. It's a great industry to be in. You meet a lot of great people. And we have a really strong franchise system. We're getting ready for our annual conference here in the next 2 or 3 weeks that we're going to do here at our corporate office. And we're seeing about 80% of our system that's going to show up to that conference. We haven't made it mandatory because when you make things mandatory, sometimes people don't necessarily want to be there. And so voluntarily, we've had about 80% of our system show up. And we're probably going to, over the next week or so, see a few more sign up. So we're really excited about that. Really excited about our franchisees that are doubling our initial numbers. I think it took me 7 years to get to $1 million in revenue. We had a franchise or two franchises last week do it in their fourth year of business. So our systems have continued to grow. Overall, whether it's our marketing or our efficiencies with our operations, networking, and what we can do individually to help our franchisees scale and or what they can do to scale in their individual markets has been very strong for us.
Michael, this hour has blown by, and literally your energy is contagious. I really, really feel your passion, which is, I've always said, is the next to money, the most important thing that a franchisor can bring to this business and this business model is passion, and you're certainly rich in that. I'm going to ask you, as you mentioned your conference, to help the audience learn where they may see you next. Are you participating in any expos upcoming or any events that would be industry-type events? And at the very least, let's share with the audience how they can get in touch with you and learn more about opportunities either to utilize your brand from the consumer level, and more importantly, we hope to learn more about how they can become richer in experience to learn about the brand itself as a possible opportunity for them as a franchisee.
Yeah, you know, when I was listening to the initial part of your segment there and the shows and all of that, you just get so busy entrenched in the business. And we initially went to a lot of those shows and got really involved in the franchise industry. And frankly, it's a small industry and you really get to know people. And the last few years we've kind of fallen off trying to really grow our internal system, and it made myself say, hey, we got to get more involved in doing some of the shows and joining the IFA and getting out to the conference you guys were talking about this week. So I apologize. I have to look into that more to see where Junk King's going to be as far as getting involved in more of the trade shows and things, but I think that's something that we need to do. Now, that said, we have done a great job of getting involved with the brokers, so any franchise broker out there should know how to get a hold of us and introduce you to our model. We have great relationships with the brokers, so this isn't a plug for the brokers, but if you can get out there and you're looking for a business, they're a great way to kind of vet through things. But if you want to call us directly, you could obviously reach us at our phone number, which is the number we use for consumers as well, is 888-888-JUNK. It's very easy to remember, 888-888-JUNK. Junk is 5865. You can also get all our information on our website, which is www.junk-king.com. So that's junk-king, or instead of a dash, hyphen, .com, junk-king.com. There's a franchising tab there. It'll walk you through how to get in touch with us. And we are very, very prompt at getting back to you and getting you through the system, really start to understand our system. We use some software systems to really work through the candidates initially as well, which I didn't mention earlier, but depends on how engaged they are and moving on through our system. So, yeah, that's how you can reach us. Probably the easiest way is to pick up and call us. We have live reps answering the phone 15 hours a day.
Awesome. Michael Andriaki is CEO, co-founder of Junk King. Thanks for being our guest today and sharing so much with our audience, and we wish you all the best going forward in the future.
Hey, thank you, guys. Congratulations on your success as well. And I had an absolute blast. So if you want to do this again, talk about other topics, I'm all for it. Thank you for your time.
Love it. Love it. Well, Stan, it's amazing. All these brands, emerging brands, you know, I go back to Aziz Hashim's comment on our show a couple of weeks ago when he said he got information from Frandata that an emerging brand is entering franchising at the clip of one a day. And, I mean, there's just so many more that are out there. And that's what this show is about. It's about really prepping those brands as they're coming in to learn about what other brands have done to create sensible and sustainable franchising. And Michael did a great job today in sharing some of his experiences.
Absolutely, Paul. And as we continue to say, we surprise ourselves by thinking we know so many people in this world, and each week with the help of these fine folks in the PR world that we are aligned with, we continue to learn more and more stories about more and more opportunities that have somehow or other not made it up to the radar screen yet. And I'm richer for the experience, and I certainly hope the audience is capturing some of that as well.
I am too. Well, Stan, enjoy and have a great event at Franchise Leadership Development Conference right there in the great city of Buckhead, across the street from your office. Enjoy, please. Definitely say hello to everybody there, and specifically Therese and Gary for putting on what I know is going to be a great event. And then I will see you next week in Denver. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.